Hey everyone, Corey here. So in case you haven't noticed, the Rewatch podcast is branching out into different series beyond just Sliders. You know, we don't want to just settle on just having Sliders on this podcast feed. Once we finish Sliders, we want to move on to something else, of course. But in the meantime, we are adding a second show to the Rewatch podcast, and that is our Star Trek film series Rewatch. And that is being hosted by me and my good friend Nathan. We both really enjoy Star Trek, so we hope that you'll join us for that. We are recording episode 1 this week, which will be covering Star Trek the Motion Picture, and we'll probably have that out to you in about a week or so. So thank you for joining us here on the Rewatch podcast, and enjoy this new episode of the Sliders Rewatch. Bye.
What if you could find brand new worlds right here on Earth, where anything is possible? Same planet, different dimension.
I found the gateway.
The Rewatch podcast presents The Sliders Rewatch, dedicated to the series Sliders on Fox and Sci-Fi Channel. Join us each week as we continue crossing the Einstein-Rosen-Podolsky Bridge and find ourselves in strange new worlds. Email your thoughts on each episode to the Rewatch Podcast at gmail.com. Join us on Facebook at facebook.com/rewatchpodcast or on Twitter at rewatchpod.
And welcome back to the Rewatch podcast and our Sliders Rewatch. I'm Corey.
And I'm Tom.
Thank you for joining us again to discuss two more episodes of Sliders. This week we are discussing Into the Mystic and Time Again and World. Beginning with our first episode this week, Into the Mystic, written by Tracy Torme, directed by Richard Compton. Originally aired March 1st of 1996.
Process servers. That's why Grim Reapers get those gigs. The intimidation factor. And they just love waking folks up in the middle of the night.
After reviewing the summons that Reaper handed you, there's not a whole lot I can do.
Yeah, but you said you could get bill collectors off our backs. You said off our backs.
But you see, you ran out on a bill owed to an accredited shaman. I mean, I'm good, but I'm not that good.
Well, we'll just have to find a way to get some cash.
Didn't you read the fine print before you signed that medical form?
No.
Dr. Zhang has filed for a retribution substitution.
What does that mean?
He gets his choice of a body part for his medical experiment if you default. And he's chosen, according to this document, your brain.
You can't be serious. This is some kind of a joke, right?
Sure. Keep telling yourself that.
We pick up where the last season ended with a very surreal scene of the professor giving Quinn a eulogy while Remy, Wade, and Ryan look down upon his grave. They start to walk off and Quinn starts begging for them to come back as his hands break through the ground. It's then that Quinn awakes, is told that Ryan saved him by removing the bullet and has since left the group. It's then that Quinn awakes and is told that Ryan saved him by removing the bullet and has since left the group, brokenhearted that Wade wouldn't stay with him on this new world. Also gone is the dog. As the sliders slide, Quinn notices a man raking leaves, laughing at them hysterically, a man he has also seen in his dream. They arrive on a new world that is fascinated with the occult in general, and Quinn falls immediately, complaining about his shoulder. They head to a medical clinic, and while the doctor appears and begins treating Quinn for a headache, Arturo and Wade notice the witch's alphabet on the wall and the doctor's degrees in spells and divination, and they realize that the doctor is actually a witch doctor. Quinn comes out apparently healed, but unable to pay the bill, so the group flees while the doctor yells he will curse them, literally. Upon getting a room at the Dominion Hotel, they notice that sorcerer-labeled items are everywhere in this dimension, signifying his dominance in the marketplace here. The sliders are awakened from sleep by noises outside the door, which turns out to be a process server dressed as a Grim Reaper, bringing notice that Quinn is being sued for non-payment of his bill. The next day, a psychic motions the Sliders into her tent, warning them of grave danger. Arturo is very unbelieving, but seems flummoxed slightly when the psychic calls out Arturo on resenting Quinn for his natural abilities and feeling bad for neglecting his son back home. She then reveals that they must hurry to find the sorcerer before he goes sliding. The Sliders decide to find the sorcerer because it's possible he has the power to control the destinations of slides. Directed by Pavel, they find their way to the sorcerer's castle and are met by his manservant, Mr. Gale, who recognizes Quinn but still turns them away. Quinn calls out that they have crossed the Einstein-Rosen-Podolsky Bridge, and the sorcerer's voice echoes, demanding that they be brought to him. His floating visage appears, and in return for giving them the ability to get home, he gives them the task of retrieving blueprints from the aforementioned witch doctor who stole them from him previously. Before they can make an attempt, they are caught by a bounty hunter and brought to Dr. Zhang. Wade provides a distraction in order for Remy to overpower the bounty hunter, grabbing his gun. They find what appeared to be sliding machine blueprints and escape. Upon returning to the sorcerer, Mr. Gale takes the blueprints and tells them to leave and wait for the sorcerer, but being that they slide very soon, Quinn rushes past and finds the sorcerer's hidden room and the sorcerer himself, who turns out to be another Quinn. Sorcerer Quinn then discovers that Mr. Gale had betrayed him, sending him away to be caught by bounty hunters and punished. Sorcerer Quinn explains that Dr. Zhang wanted the sliding machine for market share. Zhang and the shamans held people hostage in this dimension with voodoo oaths and crackpot potions. When Sorcerer Quinn slid here, he saw business potential and so created the sorcerer trademark, and it took off. Sorcerer Quinn then fixes the timer so the group can return home, and they slide using their scientific squeaky gate litmus test, which fails, and they decide they haven't returned home. Contributing to their disbelief is that the newspaper says that unbelievably, OJ was on trial, the Raiders play in Oakland, and the Cleveland Indians are in the World Series. They slide away as Quinn's mother comes out and thanks Mr. Gale for fixing the squeaky gate after all these years, indicating that they may in fact have been in their home dimension.
Help me strap him down. Good work, my little friend. You're the best in the business.
Cut the crap and give me my bounty.
This is truly a splendid specimen. I may just keep it and put it in a jar right next to the brain of our beloved ex-president, Ed Wood Jr.
While the body's still warm.
Quinn!
Get out.
I am sorry, Doctor, but these people just...
Get out of here, all of you! Get out! Take the evening off!
I warn you. We are personal friends of the sorcerer, and he's not going to like this one little bit.
Like I'm scared. Get back.
Dr. Zhang, please. I'm begging you. Take me instead. Even trade. I'll do anything you want.
It's a trick.
Shut up.
You can always find another brain. Where will you ever get another me?
If you're truly sincere, prove your commitment with a kiss.
Lying witch!
All right, so a little bit of trivia on this episode.
So in this episode, when Quinn slides through the vortex, you notice he comes out and he just falls flat on his face. All right. And then when they go to the doctor, there was a line there that when he comes out and he's apparently healed, Arturo says, well, he had a gunshot wound to the shoulder. You know, it wasn't a headache. Originally, that line was supposed to say he dislocated his shoulder falling out of the vortex. And if you listen to the actual episode right there, you can tell that they overdubbed the original line there. So when Arturo says he had a gunshot wound to the shoulder, you can tell there's a slight change in the audio. It's not like if you're just listening, you wouldn't notice it. Like if you're just watching for, you know, fun, you wouldn't notice it. But if you really pay attention, there's a slight change in the sound for that. The thing was, they didn't know if they were going to be able to pay off the cliffhanger from last season. We discussed that in the last episode. Fox said, don't worry about it. Right. So Tracy Torme wrote that line so that they could exchange it. If Fox decided that they could pay it off, they would replace that line in there. So it was good on him to do that. There's also some additional lines from Dr. Zhang about the sorcerer. So there's some more about the curse when he's yelling at them. He says something like, you know, you don't cross the AMA, you know, the American Medical Association. And like the extra line sounded very like evil villain, like campy evil villain, like, blah, ha, 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 you do not cross the AMA. So it's good that they probably cut those. We were supposed to have a scene with Gomez Calhoun, more Gomez Calhoun in the Dominion Hotel, because, you know, up to this point, he's been the hotel clerk at the Motel 12, but now he's going to be the hotel clerk in the Dominion Hotel going forward. And he was going to come out wearing like makeup like Alice Cooper, you know, like it's like really like pale face makeup with some eyeliner and stuff like that. And Arturo had a great line, which I would have loved to have heard. It was something about, I see Mr. Calhoun dipping into mummy's makeup again, you know. And I'm like, that's awesome. That would have made for a great, you know, memorable quote there.
Yeah.
With Pavel, we have Pavel back. There was going to be some bartering for payment because he didn't want to take him to the Sorcerer's Castle over to the Golden Gargoyle Gate Bridge. He didn't want to take him. And he said, well, his ring looks nice. And he points to Arturo's ring that he's wearing. So basically they give him his ring and then they say, okay, I'll take you. And it wasn't going to be just a normal cab ride. They were going to be like going really fast because he was so scared about going there, whipping around corners, like a very, you know, dramatic, almost like a car chase scene, like in a big summer blockbuster movie. It was going to be very fast. You were going to see scarecrows on the sidewalks, knocking those over. The bats that they mentioned later were going to splat against the windshield, and he was going to use the windshield wipers to wipe them off. So it was supposed to be a much more crazy cab drive there. They were going to be screaming and, like, you know, going nuts inside the cab. It was interesting, but I can imagine it's just budget that the reason why they couldn't do that. You know, a lot of special effects, I guess.
Yeah.
They had a different explanation for the missing bridge. In the final episode, we see they say it's like a trick of the light diffusion, something like that. Originally, they were going to talk about mirrors, smoke and mirrors, you know, typical magician type stuff. You were going to see some more glass jars in the Dr. Zhang's place because he had mentioned the brain of their president, Ed Wood, being in a jar. You're going to see Edgar Allan Poe's brain, Boris Karloff's brain, Lizzie Borden's brain, and Richard Nixon's brain were all going to be like on the shelf labeled. There was a scene of how Arturo, Wade, and Remy got into Dr. Zhang's place after Quinn was in with the doctor, you know, after having been captured by the bounty hunter. They were going to have a scene showing how Arturo, Wade, and Remy pushed through past the nurse and get past her. And there was a scene at the end where Quinn and Wade and Remy are saying, boy, that little guy, that little bounty hunter, he's like a demon, you know, because of how small he is. He looks evil. And Arturo like, no. This is perfectly, you know, explained. He's just a very short, very ugly man. And that's it. So, yeah, because Arturo was the voice of, you know, like science in this episode, like not believing in the magic. So it was just another scene trying to push that Arturo was not a believer.
Who else has seen your real face?
Only Mr. Gale. Oh, and you, of course.
God. You must be so lonely.
Bob. Is it that obvious?
One thing I don't understand. What did Zhang want with a sliding machine?
Very simple. Market share. For years, Zhang and the shamans held these people hostage with their voodoo oaths and crackpot potions. When I first slid onto this world, I sensed incredible business potential. I had all these trade routes to bring great products from different worlds, but I couldn't get shelf space. Mr. Gale and I created the Sorcerer trademark, and the whole thing took off.
So Zhang wants access to your suppliers.
Exactly.
And you've become a prisoner of your own success.
In some ways, aren't we all? Mr. Gale convinced me the Empire would collapse if the world found out the Sorcerer had a human face. My other self is so vital. He's living his life. That's what I'm going to do from now on. It's a liberation for which I can never repay you. But I'm still going to try by returning you home.
getting into our discussion of Into the Mystic, right here at the beginning, you were saying last week in the trivia that Fox was saying they weren't sure if they could pay off the cliffhanger ending of Quinn getting shot.
Yep.
And that they would address it in a single scene here at the beginning. It's kind of two scenes because we have this dream sequence thing as well.
Right.
And Ryan has just up and left, I guess, with the dog.
With the dog. Thank goodness for that. You know, we talked a lot about it, you know, in the discussion last time about, you know, it would have been nice to if they could have kept him on like the writers. They had the plot line for him to last a couple episodes, and just for whatever reason, it just didn't happen. It would have been nice if he could have stuck around a little bit longer.
Yeah, well, the thing that bothers me the most is that they got the actor back,
mm-hmm.
and he was only in one shot with Wade, getting all kissy right. with Wade in the dream,
right?
Wouldn't it make more sense to maybe get rid of the stupid dream and then have the actor in the scene where they leave and sort of have him explain, oh, I can't go with you, I'm going to stay here or something like that?
Yeah, that definitely. I like that a lot better, you know, than the dream.
Yeah, the dream was just silly, really. Yeah, mm-hmm. with Quinn's hands coming up out of the ground.
Well, actually, when I was looking through some of the behind-the-scenes stuff, there was the scene... Again, Fox saying that they don't know, you know, what to do if they want to have that resolved or anything. They don't care. They weren't even sure that Into the Mystic was going to be the first run episode. So they were like, yeah, we might not show that one first. So Tracy Torme had another scene that he was going to put in the beginning here. If this one didn't run first, the original scene was going to be the one from, I think it was called Lawyer World, where they try to order a hot dog and they have to sign all these waivers. And, you know, if you get like knocked over or something like that, they can sue you for bumping them. You know, you remember that scene?
Yeah.
That was like an opener to one of the other episodes. That was going to be the scene that they put here instead of the dream sequence. And then when they said, okay, no, it will go first, that's when he came up with the idea of the dream sequence.
Right. Okay. So he had to come up with something.
Yeah.
And this was pretty much the best they could do to sort of weasel it
in.
His
hands were tied. Yeah.
Yeah. It makes a lot of sense because it's not good.
It's not good. At the very least, we get to see him there, you know?
Yeah.
It's not like in some of the later episodes where they slide with someone, they're just gone, you know, the next episode.
Yeah, exactly. But, well, as it stands, Ryan doesn't even get to say goodbye. He's just left.
He's just gone.
Yep. And I guess you're happy because no more Henry the dog either.
There's no more Henry the dog. Darn it. I am a dog lover, everybody. I really am. But just not in, you know, when you're sliding between dimensions. Leave the dog at home, you know?
So they slide onto this world, and it's full of the occult. It's like religion, really. Witchcraft as religion.
Mm-hmm.
And they go to see this witch doctor, Dr. Zhang. And I love that Wade and Arturo are looking around the office, and they see the witch's alphabet and things like that. And Wade says, oh, my friend Sabrina back home is totally into this stuff.
Right,
and immediately I thought, is that supposed to be a drop line that she, the actress, Sabrina Lloyd, is into this stuff?
I did see a interview with Tracy Torme. He said something about how Sabrina's influences are really felt now in the character as they went on. So it's very possible that she was into that. So they threw that in there. Another possibility, which I thought of, this is what I thought of when I first saw it, because I didn't even, when I was watching it back then in college, I didn't really think about the characters who were playing the characters. Mm-hmm. I didn't think about their real names and whatnot. The first thing I thought of was because there is a character called Sabrina the Witch, Sabrina the Teenage Witch,
right.
Which was I think a TV show, but I think it's also in comic books, like in little kid comic books.
Yeah. Well, it was Melissa Joan Hart. Who played
the TV show.
Yeah.
So I thought of that immediately when I first saw it because I just knew that character. So a couple different possibilities for that.
Yeah, that's a good call. I can't believe I didn't think of Sabrina the Teenage Witch.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, like I was saying, there's this whole idea of witchcraft as a strong religion. Because when you think about it, you know, the dominant religions throughout America, probably the same here in Australia as well, are Catholicism, Christianity. Judaism is quite strong over in America as well. But mm-hmm. you know, there's a lot of religions now,
right?
As it stands. But, you know, this world sort of takes it to the level of where witchcraft is a very strong religious force in this world and its impact the culture.
Yeah, it seems very dominant. Yeah, seems like the dominant one.
Yeah. So you get all this cool stuff about how doctors are actually like witch doctors, and then you got shamans and fortune tellers and things like that. When they run into Pavel later, which was cool to have Pavel back, and they're talking about it, and Pavel says, oh, you're not going to talk about politics in my cab, are you? Right,
exactly. He said something about Ouija boards in the classroom and whatnot. Mm-hmm. I was like, that's cool. That's cool. Now, here's the thing. If I jump ahead a little bit, with witchcraft being so strong on this world as a religion, they didn't really go into much of like an explanation of how that came to be. You know, there's not a lot of alt history that explains why that even happened. You know, like how did witchcraft become so popular? They mention that Edward Jr. was president, but that doesn't really like... One president wouldn't necessarily change the culture, and so that magic was all over the place.
Yeah. I mean, I thought that was a funny line.
Right.
About
oh, yeah,
Edward,
definitely.
Just because of, you know, the movies that he made.
It's just something that I was like, man, you know, it's like, I like the ones where they give you the alt history so you can see, like, where did it diverge? And I think, if I recall correctly, we get some of that in the future episodes here, but it's not as much as you got in the first season.
If I really had to think about it, I mean, when you think of witchcraft in America, your mind would go to something like the Salem witch trials, that right. kind of thing. So maybe in this world, they didn't actually take that route. You know, they weren't like burning witches or whatever it was that they did to presumed witches back then.
Right, right.
And maybe they flourished as a society to become this strong religious force within the country.
Yeah, that could be. Now, I didn't realize this when I was doing some research, but there's like I use dimensions of continuity for getting those lost scenes, those deleted scenes. But there's another site that I came upon. I think it's earthprime.net, I believe. In that one, they have something called the Travelog. And at first I was like reading it and I was like, where did they get this information from? Is this like, is like canon, or did the producer say something about it? But I think they just made it up themselves. What they did was, every world that the Sliders have gone to, they have apparently went and developed a backstory for each of those worlds. If they mentioned it in the episode, then they put it in there. But if they didn't mention it in the episode, then they go ahead and like make up their own backstory. So they do have a backstory for this world, and it's too long to even get into, you know, on here. But if you go over there to that site, it'll tell you about the backstory of all these other different dimensions that we only get like a snippet of. And it's just one person's interpretation, of course. It's not official. It's not canon by the producers. It's just what these guys, I guess, have come up with. So yeah, it's actually earthprime.com. If you go there, there's a thing called the Travelog, and you can go ahead and tour. They say start the tour, and you can go and click through different the different worlds that you've seen in Sliders. And like I said, they give you a kind of a history of that world in there. It's kind of neat to look at.
Yeah, that sounds like an interesting site to check out. Good tip there.
Yeah, so just like you know, you have your theory there. You just said, I thought, oh yeah, well this, you know, this site also has theories as well, which are, you know, you might enjoy looking into. If you're really into the alternate dimensions and alt history, you might like reading about it.
So our Sliders can't pay Dr. Zhang's bill, and they get the tip that there's this guy called the Sorcerer, and he can help them. So they're going to go and see the Sorcerer. Or as I should say it, we're off to see the Sorcerer.
Exactly.
Because it's a total Wizard of Oz parody, right?
It is. Totally. And I picked that up. When I first saw it, I was like, wait a second. Really? I don't know. I could have done without the Wizard of Oz reference myself.
But
I'm just saying.
Down to the detail of, you know, in the Wizard of Oz, they follow the Yellow Brick Road, right?
Mm-hmm.
Here, they go across Golden Gate Bridge.
Yes.
Know? So even that's paralleling gold, yellow, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And they call it Golden Gargoyle Gate Bridge, as Pavel says.
Exactly.
Terrible name. Terrible yes. retcon of the name of the bridge.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, we get into some cheesy sci-fi effects when they get to the invisible part of the bridge.
Right.
Because they do this shot from below, and it's obviously blue screen. Yeah. They haven't got the lines around the actors quite right, so you can still see that blue behind them, which is a shame. But, again,
well, yeah,
you know,
Yeah. They're on limited budget, you know, a TV show that we weren't even sure was going to come back, you know, not a lot of support from the network, you know, it's, mm-hmm. It's understandable.
But they get there and they go through all this stuff about they need to get blueprints from Dr. Zhang. And it's making me think that, of course, you know, I don't think the sorcerer is who he says he is, that he's definitely not the sorcerer.
Yeah. As soon as I saw the big head, I'm like, oh, come on. There's someone behind that.
Yeah. And when he's sending them off to get blueprints, I'm thinking he's some sort of thief or something. Like he just corporate espionage or something. He steals plans from other people and then makes them himself and sells it. Of course, it doesn't end up.
Right, yeah.
And it sort of takes... I don't know. It just sort of slows the episode down. I mean, they're there and then they're gone again and they're back at Dr. Zhang's again and then they're back at
they're back and forth quite a lot.
Yeah, it just seems to be like that. And all these people seem scared of going to see the sorcerer, but they seem to just go in and out willy-nilly.
Right, exactly. And that, you know, actually that's a Wizard of Oz reference too when they have to go to Zhang's to get the blueprints. Just like in Wizard of Oz, they had to go to the witch to kill her or whatever. Mm. You know, they're sent on a quest in order for Dorothy to be sent home. She had to go kill the witch in order for these guys to go home. They have to get the blueprints.
And of course, we get this lackey character of Gale. So what did you think of Mr. Gale?
I think, and I don't think he shows up ever again, like in other episodes. I don't recall him showing up again. I could be wrong. But I think that they were trying to do another thing. Like he would be another reoccurring character like Gomez Calhoun and Pavel, you know, that they've had before that just show up randomly. Because how much did they use him in this episode? He was in the dream as like, I don't know if he was a preacher or a coffin bearer or whatever. He had, you know, was dressed up. He had the hat. Then he wakes up from the dream. Quinn wakes up from the dream and he's there raking leaves and laughing like a maniac. I don't know why he was laughing. I'm like, what the hell is that about? And then we get to the actual episode proper and he's the assistant. And then we get to the end of the episode in the teaser or in the tag at the end, the stinger. And he's there as like the fix it man, the repair man. I'm like, boy, they used him a ton. So I don't know who he is. You know, there's some, when we get to the messages in time, there's some things about him that come up that people were asking as well. So I'll leave that for later, I guess.
But yeah, when he's standing there and he's cackling at them as they slide out, like he seems to be not affected by the giant vortex that they're jumping
into.
Not at all.
The normal thing.
Just cackling away. And then when they see him at the Sorcerer's Castle, it even sounded like it was just a line that was dropped in there later. Is Quinn just goes, hey, I know that guy. And that's it.
Right. Yeah.
You're just like, no, that's that weirdo who was cackling at us. Like, I'm going to remember that guy. I'm not just going to go, oh, I know that guy, and then just be done with it.
Exactly. So, yeah, I don't know. I really don't get why he was cackling like that. I want an explanation. I didn't see anything anywhere about that part because that's just odd. You know, like a big tunnel vortex opens up in front of you and you just stare at the guy and just start laughing like crazy, like mentally unbalanced or something. I don't know. Yeah.
And then at the end, the way he gets dispatched, I don't quite understand what that was all about either. In that, you know, they find out that he had been giving plans for sliding equipment to Dr. Zhang. And Quinn's just like, get him out of here, notify the bounty hunters. I'm like, what is he wanted for something?
What I'm thinking is he doesn't want to actually kill him himself. But if he sends him out and says, this guy has stolen from me, then he's going to be on the run. You know, so now he'll have to deal with the bounty hunters himself. And most likely he doesn't seem like he's going to be like, okay, you know, like the bounty hunters are going to get him and they're going to kill him or whatever. So I think maybe that's what Sorcerer Quinn was thinking about, maybe trying to, you know, send him out there and give him, you know, just so he doesn't get his hands dirty, basically.
Right.
I mean, that's a possibility. I don't know for sure. But I thought that was weird, too. It's like you got him right there, you know? Can't you get him tried for corporate espionage or something? I don't.
So it is. It just falls apart a bit at the end here.
Although, you know, like if he does, like let's say he keeps Gale there and decides to have him get in trouble for corporate espionage or, you know, whatever, then Sorcerer Quinn might have to reveal himself as the sorcerer.
Then
it would start to, his empire might start to, you know, not have as much impact as it does. Whereas this way, if he sends him out there, you know, he can just say, bounty hunters, you find this guy. If you, you know, if you kill him, here's what you're going to get. This amount of money, you know, whatever. You know, That's your job. So that's a way to save his sorcerer, you know, trademark image or whatever without getting his own hands, like I said, dirty.
Yeah, I guess so. Like, he can't have Mr. Gale going out telling everybody who he is.
Exactly.
So the Sorcerer Quinn has this moment where he's looking at his alternate self and feeling that Quinn's living his life. He's out there having adventures. And in the meantime, he sort of sits in his room. And I guess he was going to other worlds and getting resources to sell on.
Right. Yeah. He was going to the other places to get the actual like medicines that he was selling to the public here. Because he said something like when he got here, was it the shamans and the witch doctors? Like they had, you know, they were trying to get people to buy their stuff, you know, and it wasn't stuff that worked. It was just all ridiculous, you know, not real medicine. And so when he comes in, he brings in medicine from other worlds and puts it under the sorcerer label. And that's how he's able to get his, you know, place in the market and, you know, be so popular and selling, you know, so well, because his stuff actually works because it's actual medicine. It's not just, you know, like hokum pokum magic or whatever.
Yeah, the way they set it up in the beginning with Dr. Zhang, Quinn has a gunshot wound to the shoulder, but hey, his headache's gone, so you guys owe me money.
Exactly.
So he reconfigures the timer for them and says, all right, I found, you know, this should take you home now. And man, this ending has stuck with me through all of Sliders because it is so irritating, is it not?
It is. It's really bad.
Yeah, because they do, you could presume that they got home. I mean, they sort of play it off as in, like, you know, O.J. Simpson's on trial and
right,
so on and so forth. And they said, you know, a lot of stuff would have happened while we're gone. They've probably been gone for, you could say, a year.
Yeah.
Because it's this new season. And Artura's like, oh, really, that much, though? Well, I don't know.
Well, it wasn't said in the show, but it has been officially confirmed. Tracy Torme did say they did reach home on that episode. That was their actual official home prime. He did confirm it. So they did reach home, but you know, they had less than a minute to determine if it was their home.
Yeah.
So it's like, well, what can they actually do to prove that it's their home? And of course, the squeaky gate test they did, and it didn't squeak, so they're not home.
Yeah. And that's all Mr. Gale's fault, of course.
Yes, all Mr. Gale's
fault. He was the one who fixed it.
Oh, that Mr. Gale.
And a completely different actor playing Quinn's mom.
Yes.
Doesn't
yes,
even look yes. like the woman from season
nope.
one. Not even close.
It doesn't. The original actor does come, or the actress does come back in the future episodes, I know. But I think, I forget what episode she comes back in, but I know the original one does come back at some point.
At the same time, it kind of reminded me of Lost when they're going through the newspaper and talking about all this stuff that has happened.
Oh,
and we know for
right.
a fact. And they're picking out the weird things.
Right.
But on Lost, there was an episode where Ben comes to Jack and tells him, like, what's been going, and what's going on in the real world. Christopher Reeve had died, and the Red Sox won the World Series. That was the big one about
how, that was the big one. Yeah, I remember that.
So, that kind of reminded me of Lost a little bit.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, I don't know. It just, this ending just sticks with me. Was that they were there? They were right there.
Right there.
God.
Oh, well. Yeah. Oh, we missed one thing we were going to talk about. Arturo has a son.
Ah, yes. Yes. We were discussing this last week.
Yeah.
Because we couldn't remember whether or not they'd mentioned it in the episode. Maybe this was where it came from.
It may have been. I'm pretty sure. I meant to go back again. Time. I meant to go back and try to find that line that they had mentioned it in the previous episode, but I just forgot about it, ran out of time. But it's confirmed right here. He does have a son.
I mean, he doesn't actually say anything, but he doesn't deny it. So you can assume that whatever this fortune teller said was true, in that he envies Quinn because all this scientific knowledge comes to him so easy. And it makes Arturo feel bad because he has to work hard at it. And it also makes him feel bad about neglecting the son he had back home. So he does have a son. Again, like we said last week, I don't think this is ever going to come up again.
No, it's not. It's too bad because this would have been something to explore. This would have been a neat episode, you know, a little character development for him.
Yeah. And I guess if he does have a son that he neglected, I guess he's not going to talk about him a lot.
Right, right. But I mean, we could have had an episode where he runs into his son, you know, where his son is one of the protagonists in that episode or something.
Exactly. You know, maybe he was a good father at some point, so he can share a small amount of time with his son or something.
See, yeah, that would have been great, you know, because we do get those episodes with, you know, with Remy and with Quinn and Wade, but we don't really have that with Arturo. It would have been nice to have seen a little bit of that.
And now, another episode of Moments of Truth with Maximilian Arturo.
Given the fraudulent nature of this man's claims, I suggest a response that harkens back to our childhoods.
Run! Run like hell!
This has been another episode of Moments of Truth with Maximilian Arthur.
All right, well, getting into our second episode today, Time Again and World, written by Jacob Epstein, directed by Vern Gillum. This originally aired April 5th of 1996.
There was a shootout. We barely made the slide. Are you okay?
What's that?
He handed it to me before he died. Top Hat Nightclub. Some sort of chip.
At the risk of appearing redundant, Miss Wells, I would point out that the last time we became involved in the affairs of the worlds that we visit, Mr. Mallory here ended up with a bullet in his back. We're tourists, Miss Wells. We must not become emotionally invested.
Emotionally invested? I just saw a man gunned down on the street. Excuse me if that's a little hard to ignore, all right?
Let it go.
How long we got on this place?
36 hours and counting.
36 hours. Almost enough time for my back to recover from your splenetic and venomed attack. Any idea what you weigh?
We start at the end of a two-week slide where the sliders are unhappy, frustrated, and angry at their situation. Before they slide, they witness a car crash and a shooting. The gunned-down man gives way to matchbook containing a disc inside and the message LC, the Rock, 5-4. Unable to save the man shot, they slide and immediately see the exact same scene around them. Only this time, Wade yells out, warning the victim of the shooting, and this time, he escapes unharmed while the shooter is gunned down. Wade is given a message by the shooter, who turns out to be a police officer. The message is, Elsie, the Rock, 8 o'clock, 5-4. While Wade and Arturo argue about getting emotionally involved, two people bust into their room with guns, warning them to forget what happened and not to tell the police anything. Remy and Arturo want to go and hide, but Wade says no. Both people shot mention the same name, and she feels like she can help. The boys leave, but come back, choosing to help out their friend. Wade goes to help the police, not understanding that in this world, they are the bad guys, responsible for continuing to repress the Constitution of the United States, which was edited heavily after President Kennedy was shot, taking away many important rights. The two people who broke into the hotel room were working for Judge Nassau, who was attempting to get the full text of the Constitution to the public by having it read by the DJ, Lloyd Clark, LC, on pirate radio. The police raid the club where LC works at, and eventually they capture the judge. Remy then goes and tells the cops that in exchange for the judge and full pardons, they will give him the only copy of the full Constitution that they have. The exchange is made, Nassau is released, and the sliders slide, sneakily leaving behind a program on the computers that will send out the Constitution to everyone in that dimension.
So, you're interested in music?
Oh, yeah.
We have some of the latest state-approved sounds here. Liberace Unplugged, Jim Morrison sings Irving Berlin, and Kurt Cobain's Christmas album.
Yeah, I can see that.
Seen the new Donny Osmond video? Oh, it's outrageous. Can you believe all that plastic surgery? Man, that guy is really out there.
All right, so trivia in this episode, zilch.
There's none, zilch.
Could not find anything, right?
I looked on, like I said, my first choice, I go right, mentions of continuity. They have their lost and found section, and they had nothing listed at all for this episode. It wasn't even on the season two list of what they have. So, I mean, maybe there's some out there somewhere, but they don't have it there, and they seem to have everything. So if it's out there, I assume that they would have it.
Oh, well, what can you do? Can't win them all.
Exactly.
So let's get straight into our discussion of this episode. Right. So we start with this interesting concept of, you know, they witness an event happen. And then when they slide to the next world, the exact same events are taking place. Just maybe, what, 15 minutes later, 20 minutes
right.
later? So it's like worlds can be very, very similar, very close to being exactly what two separate worlds can be, you know, they're still playing out the same, but you know, it's just small differences. So
right, the timing is just a little bit off, which is a little confusing because they said time is kind of constant between dimensions, so it's a little off here, just by a little bit.
Yeah, you know, you just give it 20 minutes and you know the same thing's going to happen in this world. So an interesting idea.
Mm-hmm. Definitely.
I kind of like it. the little touch of like in the world that they start in, women have beards and mustaches. Right.
That's just a little, unnerving, I'm going to tell you.
Yeah, and they're not like full beards or anything. They're very they're very ladylike, you know, soft.
Oh, they are very. Yes, they are. they're like the 12 and 13-year-old boys I teach, you know, and they're like trying to grow a beard. It's right. Very light and barely there. I'm like, "Oh, okay. Just wait a couple of years, bud."
So yeah, so I find that funny, you know, if they're going to go with this idea of bearded ladies, they give them like as feminine a beard as you can give them. And then when they get to the next world, the men wear skirts.
Right. At first they think they're kilts.
Right.
And then they come to the conclusion, well, wait, if Hoover was the president, it could be a result of the whole cross-dressing rumors that abounded back then.
Yeah. So I like this just a little touch of subverting gender roles, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we got it in a big, huge episode when we were talking about the world where all the women are the dominant gender. But here it's just a slight little touch. And I think it's the thing I kind of found interesting about this world was they're trying to flesh it out a lot more. Whether or not they succeeded in doing that's a different story.
Right.
Because they get in this whole thing about they witnessed a shooting, Elsie the Rock, Vi4, the U.S. Constitution. And honestly, I struggle a bit to understand what goes on in this episode.
Good. I'm glad you do too, because I did too. It took me a while, and I watched it, and I'm like, okay, I remember watching it originally. I'm like, I don't quite get what's going on here. I had no idea, and I had to look. I looked at some other people's other people's versions, and I looked at some reviews of it, trying to get an idea. And that's why my synopsis for this one is shorter than any other one I've done, because I'm like, you know what? There's a lot of stuff in this episode that we don't even need to really, you know, it doesn't even matter that it was in there. So I just took all that out and just got down to the bare bones of what the episode was about. So yeah, it's very confusing, all the stuff they throw in here.
Yeah, and well, by the end of it, I don't quite understand what that cryptic message was. What was The Rock?
So The Rock, I don't know if it was because of the Rock dance club that was hidden behind the Calm dance club.
Right.
So that's what I'm assuming it was. Otherwise, I don't know, because when they went behind that you know, very calm 1950s-ish dance club, it was a lot harder music. It wasn't quite rock music, but
it was 90s.
Yeah, 90s generic music. So yeah, exactly. I don't know why they, you know, said The Rocks, but that's what I assumed. I don't know. I have no clue.
And then there's 5-4. What was 5-4?
Again, that's another thing. And this came up in some of the things that I was looking at for the messages in time. They said maybe it was a radio frequency. Someone had said that in their closed captioning, instead of saying 5-4, it said 5-4-0. And that they made a mistake when they were captioning or something. But they said 540 could be a radio station as well. Because that's an AM radio frequency that they could have used for pirate radio. So I don't know. I don't know what that is either.
The other thing I noticed too is that the message also contains the time 8:00.
Right.
And then later when they're in the Top Hat nightclub and Quinn is talking to Natalie.
Yep.
He says 10:00.
Yep. He does. Yep. Someone wrote on the boards back then. They said, well, you know what? He's good to look at, but he's not infallible. There you go. He made a mistake. They didn't catch it. And that's what happens. And now we're talking about it 20 some years later, 20 years later.
All right. Yeah. So I'm totally happy too that because afterwards I'm like, seriously, like this was supposed to be some sort of like grand mystery, solve the crime kind of thing.
Exactly.
And honestly, it kind of just falls flat on its face, just it as really Quinn does. Did at the beginning of the season.
Exactly. There you go. Is that a harbinger of what's coming? Oh my God. Look at you with the metaphors. Nice.
But, you know, aside from that, they do a pretty good job acting wise. Like all our main characters are doing pretty good. It's great to see Rebecca Gayheart. I really like her. She played Natalie.
Mm-hmm.
She, of course, went on to a lot of, like, I'm a big slasher movie fan. So she was in Scream 2. She was in Urban Legend. Oh, okay. So it was great to see her. She does all right.
She was in a great show for a season. called Dead Like Me. Do you ever hear that?
Oh, yeah. I forgot about that. Yeah.
That was a great show, actually based on a novel that I really like. It's by Piers Anthony, and it was a series of books called Incarnations of Immortality. And the first one was about death. And I can't remember what it was called On a Pale Horse. And in that book, a human being takes over the role of death, because that's how this world works. People take over for the offices of death and time and war. Like, those are actual things, actual jobs that human beings will hold. And so Dead Like Me was based on that novel. It took it a little bit farther because it had a group of people who were playing death instead of just one person. But yeah, she was on there for the first season. I think she left after that. But yeah, that's also where I know her from.
And, you know, we get in the whole thing about how Wade has to get involved. Arturo still got the sticking point about getting involved. He says, you know, the last time we got involved, Quinn ended up with a gunshot to his shoulder.
Exactly.
He's really starting to back it. Like, they were really getting into it at the end of season one.
Mm-hmm.
But again, Arturo's sort of trying to take a step back and saying, look, really, we should think about this. But, you know, they're all going to leave, and they all come back almost immediately to help Wade, which is fair enough.
You know, I'm glad they came back. I mean, I personally, I'd be like, no, let's not get involved. That's not, you know, we've seen two people die today in the course of a half hour. We don't want to be the third, you know? So let's not be involved with it. But, you know, they are friends. They are, as they said in the last episode, they are each other's world. So they're the only ones they have to count on. So it's nice that they, you know, they came back and continue to be, you know, people that she can count on.
They're being threatened by these two people who just bust into the hotel room.
Mm-hmm.
And that also leads to Gomez Calhoun sort of, you know, I felt like they wanted to do more with him, because they kind of get this thing about how did these two people find them at the hotel? And then later they see Gomez talking with the police, and there's just one line where she's like, oh my God, they turned Calhoun.
Right.
As if it was like some big thing. And I'm like, who gives
exactly.
a... like Gomez, I know he's like a reoccurring character, but who cares?
There was a lot of stuff, like, skip down here. There was a lot of stuff in the episode that it was like, I don't understand why we're spending time on this, or what was the significance of that? So Gomez Calhoun, definitely one of them. You know, like, why are we spending time on that? You know, he's a double agent. Oh, okay. How does that play into the overall story? It didn't really have any impact on what they were doing. The two agents who are, you know, the two cops who came into the room, busted into the room. I mean, you see them again later and you realize, oh, they're cops too. But, oh, wait, they're not the bad cops like everybody else. They're the good cops, even though they seemed like the bad cops at first. They're the good cops working with Judge Nassau. And you, as you find out later when they go to the club, they're like, oh yeah, they're secret agents, you know, trying to help Judge Nassau. It's like, I don't know. Like, if you took them all out of there, I don't know if you necessarily needed them. Wade could have very easily just felt, you know, her conscience telling them, we got to go to the police and tell them what this message was. And I'm confused about Alcatraz. Like, they mentioned Alcatraz, which the nickname was The Rock for that. So, you know, there's that. But why, like, Alcatraz doesn't come into play really at all, besides telling us that they hold political prisoners there, like Martin Luther King Jr. and Sam Kinison. Why do we even, like, it seems like there's a lot of wild goose chase stuff in here.
Yeah. I mean, that's a funny line, is that Sam Kinison's a political prisoner.
Yes. Yes.
That he would go out and just be blatant, you know,
yeah,
about what he thinks about stuff like that. So that's funny. But at the same time, I was thinking, why would they hold tours of Alcatraz? Let the public go in there. They say it's a big tourist attraction, but it is an actual prison. Like, I don't think they're going to give tourists access to an active prison.
So it's like, all right, so they give tours and we got political prisoners in there. So Nassau's going to be a political prisoner, maybe? It's like just stuff thrown in there. I'm not sure how it plays into the actual overall storyline at all.
And then there's Elsie as well. Like, they think it's Elsie, as in the girl's name Elsie. Turns out to be LC, as in Lloyd Clark. And then he's immediately just arrested once they find out who he is.
Exactly. There's just a lot of stuff in here. It's like, I don't know if it was purposely just trying to make you think it was about something else. You're trying to follow the characters, you know, like LC and Calhoun and these agents. Like maybe you're trying to understand their motivations or why they're doing this, but it doesn't matter in the end. They don't really affect the story that much at all.
Exactly. And like the plan was for LC to read the Constitution over the airways, and then Judge Nassau would give himself up because their mission was complete. That was their mission, to get it out there. But yeah. Why are they using pirate radio when they can just put it out on the internet?
Exactly.
Because that's how it ends up happening in the end. They're Doppler computers. Hurley's yep. back.
Yeah, Hurley's back.
Haven't seen Hurley for a while.
No.
And they read it, and then it stays on that computer, so it just spreads throughout the internet. So, yeah, the whole thing about the pirate radio, just that also fell apart.
There is some discussion about that in Messages in Time as well that people were wondering about. We'll get to that in a little bit.
Like, as much as that last episode, the ending fell apart, this whole episode was just a convoluted mess.
It was. The other thing was J. Edgar Hoover was made president, and he took out large portions of the Constitution, okay? But, like, that happened, like, at the time, it's 95, 96, so it happened, like, 30 years before, approximately.
Yeah, they said he stayed president for 22 years until
right.
he died.
So, all right. So, yeah. So, for 22 years, he went and he destroyed, you know, all mention of the Constitution, or, you know, fixed it up and took out big parts of it. So, in 22 years, people just completely forgot the whole Bill of Rights. Like, there's no one who remembers what the actual original rights were, it seems like. It's like that seemed odd to me as well.
I have to admit that at least their exposition extra in this episode was actually halfway decent.
Right.
Unlike ones we've talked about before. They had that
exactly.
old guy who was at the machine, and it
yeah.
sort of seemed like a more natural conversation. Like
it was much know, more natural.
Yeah,
yeah,
sort of leaning over, hey, you know, when did they declare martial law? And, you know, they're getting all this information. It just seemed a mm-hmm. bit more natural. So at least that was
yeah.
done well.
It was done well, because, like, I didn't even, like, if you notice it, that's when you know it's bad, you know? And with this, I just sort of just was watching. I'm like, yeah, oh, okay. He's just some old guy in a bar, you know, and he's talking to his friends and whatever. Very well done.
Yeah. But you're right, you know, even that guy, like, he looked like maybe he was in, what, his 60s or something like that. So
mm-hmm.
22
yeah.
years or 30 years prior, he was in his 30s. You think he would know portions of the Constitution. Like, he would have grown
yeah.
up learning about it.
Yep, exactly. But then the other question that we had was, so the judge is pardoned. The cops get the copy of the quote, only surviving copy that they have, unquote, of the Constitution, and everything's fine. But, like, now the Constitution is out there on the internet. What's to stop them from going back after the judge again? Because the agreement that they had was violated. It wasn't the only copy that they had. They could easily just go and try to track him down again, and he's still going to be living on the run or whatever. They could say, you violated the agreement. We're coming to get you. I thought it was so, I don't know. I just thought it was weird. Like, Remy goes to the cops. Hey, let's bargain. You know, I'm like, it just came out of nowhere for me.
Yeah.
You know, I'm like, okay. Because didn't his daughter say that her father's dream was to get the thing read, you know, out there to the public? But then suddenly the big deal is, no, let's rescue him. We have the Constitution. They could just go ahead and get it out there. But no, now they got to rescue the judge.
Yeah, you're right. He was going to give himself up once it was read out anyway. So
right. So why are they trying to rescue him? And then Quinn says, good ideas are nothing without good people to fight for him. But there are people willing to fight for him. You got his daughter. You had LC, you know, and I'm sure there's more than just those two. You know, you had the two agents there. I'm sure there's more people than that willing to fight for the real Constitution. So it's just, yeah, it just does not. The story is just not great. It's just messed up, you know?
And if I could just give it one other little compliment,
mm-hmm.
it's that they do this thing where they flesh out the world a little bit more. And I really enjoyed the fact that things like the Top Hat nightclub, and they
right.
go in there and they, you know, it's like a school dance or something like that.
Yes.
Like, it's all very proper. And the scene with Remy and Hurley where they're going through the records.
Oh, yes, yes.
State approved music, as it were.
Yeah.
And he finds out that they've suppressed all, like, the last 30 years of rock and roll and things like that. And there's things like Kurt Cobain's Christmas album. And
oh, yeah, I know. It was really good. They did a good job on all this. The alt history I thought was great. You know, I love that part of it because it tells you why the way things are now, this is why it happened because of this, this, and this. You know, I like that when they do that.
Yeah.
So they did a good job on it in this episode, definitely.
Yeah, it's it's like we've been saying through this whole discussion. The whole story's just, it's not good. It doesn't hold up. It doesn't mesh well together. It's just,
Excuse me, sir. I wonder if you could settle a bet. I understand that Alcatraz is open to the public.
Second most popular tourist attraction in the nation, after Hoover's tomb.
So it is no longer used as a prison.
You kidding? Martin Luther King Jr., Bobby Kennedy, Sam Kinison. All the famous political prisoners are in there, man.
You wouldn't happen to know who's in cell 5-4, would you? 5-4?
The Rock, 5-4? Is that Martin Luther King Jr. or somebody?
Skirt Boys.
I beg your pardon?
Secret Police.
Do we look like Secret Police?
Top Hat Nightclub.
We just came from there.
Pirate Radio. Radio Free America. Ask for Natalie.
All right. Well, let's get into some messages in time. What do you got?
Let's start with messages in time from our second episode here first. Just because we're talking about it now. Let's go right into it. A lot of people, all right, on the boards, and I figured out now, this second season, there's a lot more discussion happening right after the premiere of an episode. For the second season, it seems, because I found some good stuff for both episodes right after it aired. You know, like the next day, people were on the boards talking about. So maybe for the first season, there weren't too many people into it, I guess, right away. So there wasn't a lot of discussion. But now it seems like the second season, things have picked up, and there's more people talking about it the next day after a show comes out.
Dial-up connections are getting better as the years go on.
There you go. Yeah, that could be, because it was a long time between the first and second episode, from what I understand. I don't remember it myself how long it was, but people have said it was a long time, and that's why people thought it was canceled. But it actually, Tracy Tormey said it wasn't really canceled. We were just on an extended hiatus. Anyway, so the one thing that came up a lot in the discussions was, what is up with the freaking title? Time Again and World.
Mm.
What is that? Like, it doesn't make any sense. And I didn't understand it either. Like, and people misquote it all the time. They say time and again world.
Yeah.
And it's something that a lot of the reviews that I've seen commented on. Like, what is up with this title? Is it a play on words? We don't get it. Like, what does it mean? Any thoughts onto that?
Well, honestly, every time I've watched Sliders series through, when I get to Time Again and World, I always think it's that episode, and we're going to get to that episode, the one where the world is, time is running in reverse
backwards
for them.
Yes.
That's what,
yes,
I always think it is. And then I get to it, I'm like, oh no, it's this one about the stupid shooting in the Constitution, whatever it was.
Right.
And then I get a little bit more disappointed.
Right. Yeah. No, I agree. I thought the same thing, actually, when I saw what ones were coming up for next week. I was like, oh yeah. And I was like, oh no.
Yeah.
Well, so yeah, there's that. A lot of people talking about the title. Someone was asking, and I assume they must be in Canada, they were asking about Canadian rights in this dimension. Were they the same as the U.S.? Were they under the same restrictions as the U.S. had? Or wouldn't the Americans see Canada up there being more free and having, you know, very free rights and civil rights, whatever it was? And wouldn't they want to make changes similar to what Canada had, or move to Canada? And that's not something that they addressed at all, but there were some people wondering about that. Like, how does the rest of the world fit into this? Because they're so restricted in this America, whereas, you know, like places like Britain and Canada or whatever would maybe have more rights. So they were wondering about what the U.S. people here would think about that, about the other countries around the world, something that they didn't explore, but they could have.
Yeah, you know? It's an interesting point.
And then the other thing, which was, this made the most sense to me, because we're talking about, why didn't they use the internet to distribute the Constitution in the beginning? They were going to do it on pirate radio, which, you know, everyone in the entire world listens to pirate radio, right?
Mm.
Yeah, no. So it's like, why didn't they use the internet? Someone said, well, you know what? If you think about it, a government who requires fingerprints for hotels, they probably have a hold on the internet as well. It's probably filtered, just like China's internet is filtered, you know, restricted. You can't go to certain sites. You can't search for certain things. It's all these restrictions. So that could be why they didn't want to go with the internet idea in the beginning, because they thought, well, it's restricted. We won't be able to get it out there because the government won't let it get out there. They're monitoring, you know, our emails and our web surfing and everything, so we can't do it. So that could be why they decided to go ahead and use pirate radio first. It's a good explanation.
Yeah, it seems plausible enough.
But that doesn't explain at the end when they get it out on the internet.
Yeah.
You know? So it doesn't explain that. But I was thinking about, like, this theory does, you know, it would hold well with the music thing too, you know, with how the state-approved music, that explains why they don't have rock and roll and all the, you know, the hardcore stuff that we would know in our world, because the government has a control on it. So control of the music, control of the internet, it kind of makes sense. All right, now we also have some messages from the season premiere. So here's some what people were saying about Into the Mystic, and they were talking obviously about the Wizard of Oz references. They even picked up on a little bit more. They said, you know, what they do in the episode actually mirrors Dorothy and her companions, because they talk about going home. There's talk about Remy having a good heart. Arturo apparently has a French line about courage. And, of course, we've got the part about Quinn's brain. So it mirrors The Wizard of Oz quite a bit. And we didn't even pick up on those ourselves when we were talking about it earlier. So they were also wondering about magic in this world, if magic was real, or is it really all just smoke and mirrors? You know, the psychic had some type of real talent, but, I mean, we have psychics in our world, you know, that some are seem like maybe they have the talent for. Some of them are just like shysters, you know. The doctor may have had some, you know, magical power to cure his headache, or maybe he was just doing something like, you know, advanced form of acupuncture or something to relieve his headache, because that happens as well, you know, and that's not magic. And then someone asked, I was like, well, really? They said, the Grim Reapers, were they real Grim Reapers or people dressed up? I'm pretty sure they were people dressed up. Yeah, but the idea was like, is magic real here? And maybe that's why, you know, Sorcerer Quinn comes in and sees that they're just all lying to the public. And so that's why he was so successful, because he brought in real medicine, you know, as opposed to just these little tricks and, you know, spooky potions and things.
Right.
So that was some people were discussing that. Someone speculated that Sorcerer Quinn was actually Dirtbag Quinn from Eggheads, the one that said he was sliding out because he had all the gambling debts. They said maybe Sorcerer Quinn was Dirtbag Quinn and he slid here and saw the business potential, which fits, you know, because that Quinn, Dirtbag Quinn, you know, he would have seen the opportunity to make money, you know, his character. But that only fits if you think that Quinn, Dirtbag Quinn, actually slid, which I don't think he did.
No, neither do I. And it's interesting, though, because, yeah, Sorcerer Quinn wasn't actually from that world. So he had to come from somewhere else. So.
Yeah. And where is the other Quinn on this world, too, now that you think about it? We didn't get that addressed either. The gardener at the end, obviously, Mr. Gale, you could tell, but he wasn't credited for the gardener role. And normally, like when I remember that episode, when I think back to it, I just sort of assumed, oh, there's Jake the gardener again,
mm-hmm.
you know, because Jake appeared a couple episodes in season one, and I just assumed that was Jake the gardener. But looking at it this time, I'm like, oh, they're right. That is not Jake the gardener. That's Mr. Gale. But for some reason, he was uncredited for that particular role. He was credited for the other stuff, but not for the gardener at the end. I don't know why. So they were wondering about that. Another person said, why didn't the sorcerer take their timer and just have it retrieve them back to the sorcerer's world if they discovered it wasn't their home? And then he could reprogram the timer and try again, you know, which that would have been great. But the consensus was that Sorcerer Quinn didn't really get the timer back to its original function, where it retrieves people through the vortex, that he just jazzed it up to put in their home coordinates. So he didn't actually get it back to the original operating parameters that they had in the first episode of the whole series. It was just, let's put your coordinates in there and boom, now you can go.
You know? They don't really go into it. All right. So next week, we will be discussing two more episodes, of course. They are El Cid, and Love Gods.
All right, so that's it for this episode of the Rewatch Podcast. You can keep up with listener interaction by liking our Facebook page at facebook.com/rewatchpodcast and follow the show on Twitter at rewatchpod.
And remember, you can always write us an email or record a voice message and send it to therewatchpodcast@gmail.com. Also, if you've enjoyed the show, please consider giving us a rate and review on iTunes. That always helps out the show and helps build that listener interaction. We did get an email last week from Travis, so, you know, we'd love to see more people sending us your thoughts on each episode of Sliders.
Exactly. And you can be the very first second person to send us an email. You can't be the first because Travis is the first and he's the best, but you can be the first second person. So go ahead, get on your email.
Yes, go down in Rewatch Podcast history. All right, so time to get out of here. I'll just say, until next time, this job will look great next to the brain of our beloved ex-president, Ed Wood Jr.
We got a slide.
The Rewatch Podcast is not associated with NBC Universal, St. Clair Entertainment, Fox, or Sci-Fi Channel. The use of any and all copyrighted material is only for parody, news analysis, critique, or educational purposes, as provided in United States Code Title 17, aka Fair Use. Music provided by Kevin MacLeod at incompetech.com. Copyright 2015, The Rewatch Podcast.